and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Middle East Forum Radio here on WWDB 860 AM, Philadelphia Talk. And I have been following these stories in the Israeli press for the past few weeks, ever since this coronavirus, COVID-19, has really taken on global proportions. And the name that I keep on seeing repeated in article after article is the Migal Galili Research Institute, with its co-founder, or not its co-founder per se, but one of its researchers, Dr. Itai Block, a graduate of Israel's Weizmann Institute of Science in the field of computational chemistry, drug discovery, and cheminformatics. Mr. Block and the Galilee Research Institute have been working in the forefront of trying to find a vaccine for the COVID-19 virus, which is a subset of the coronavirus. And he's going to explain to us exactly what that means. Dr. Block, welcome to the program.
Hi.
So where are you joining us from right now?
I'm actually at my office at the moment.
And you're in the Galilee?
In the Galilee region, in the Migal Research Institute.
And it's in Kiryat Shmone, right?
Yeah, right.
So you have coronavirus on one hand and Hezbollah on the other. You really are in a pretty picky, precarious situation up there.
Yeah, coronavirus is everywhere. But we are in a special situation, yeah.
So tell me, what is the history of the Institute and its dealing with different types of coronavirus, and why that's important in fighting COVID-19?
Okay, so the Migal Research Institute is, is 40... I joined Migal approximately 7 years ago. Opened a new research group here. Focusing on computational drug discovery and cheminformatics, but the research institute itself exists for almost 40 years. It covers a wide range of scientific fields, from environmental science, plant science, agriculture, and biotechnology. Specifically in this project we were involved was a project that we initiated 4 years ago, and it was aimed to develop new technologies and vaccines for avian diseases in order to support the poultry industry.
So this would be, let's say, if you had a case of bird flu, or if you had some other sort of disease,
right,
which is affecting chickens or fowl or ducks or whatever else, you come in there, you evaluate the source, the genomics of what's going on, you say, all right, this is the vaccine that's appropriate for this type of virus. But the logic is that if it's the same same family of viruses that affect a chicken, and then it makes a jump into a human, you could then hypothetically reverse engineer the vaccine you used for the chicken and then apply it to a human being.
Yes, this is correct. So we are dealing with organisms, viruses, that are capable of changes in their genome and actually change rapidly over the time. And it is a common feature of viruses all over, affecting all organisms and hosts. And therefore, we are developing a technology that is generic enough to be updated each time we see a new strain. For example, if you take the seasonal flu, you take every year, there's a recommendation of the World Health Organization to update the vaccine that people are taking. And the reason for that is the rapid evolution, the rapid change in the viruses, which has to be adjusted to the current circulating strains, to the current outbreak, basically. From our perspective, the scientific, the basic research perspective, it is the same procedure that we are doing each time we update the vaccine, but this time we do a little bit larger jump or a leap in order to update it to a virus which is affecting other organisms. So we took a vaccine solution, a technology that we developed for an avian coronavirus, and we are now updating it to be able to protect against the human coronavirus, the COVID-19.
So many media reports have said that it's going to take up to 18 months for this to be mass deployed to doctors around the globe. But we have a statement from the Minister of Science in Israel, Ophir Akunis, who says in an article the other day, actually not the other day, it was 2 weeks ago, February 27th, "Congratulations to Migal on this exciting breakthrough. I am confident there will be further rapid progress enabling us to provide a needed response to the grave global COVID-19 threat." And he's basically saying that it might be ready within 90 days. Is that a correct assessment?
So we are not talking about from our side. Again, we are a research institute, and we are not the health regulators, and we cannot do here the clinical trials. So what we, I think, was what he was trying to say, basically, is that we are going to finish all the adaptation, all the adjustment needed to be able to produce from that moment on the human version of our vaccines. And from that moment on, it is basically a question for the health authorities to decide what would be the regulation, what would be the demands, and following that demand, we can come up or set up a clinical trials. We don't want to give people something that haven't been tested for safety, and this is where we are going to be in about 90 days. I have to comment that it is a really rapid or a very short time for the development of a vaccine, of a new vaccine, and even it is a more challenging task because we are talking about new technology. It's not just the same routine that we follow each year, for example, for the flu vaccine. It's a totally new one, and we want to test it. We want to be very careful and on the safe side, but on the same time trying to give some answer to this outbreak, to the very important issue.
So what exactly happens? You're going to take mice and you're going to test them, and you're going to move up to baboons, and then you'll test them, and then all of a sudden you'll say, all right, we've done our animal trials, now we're ready for human trials. Government of Israel or Ministry of Health or FDA, do we have your permission to go ahead and do this? They'll say, okay, yes, go ahead, do it. And then how long will it go from when you submit to the government? Or I know there's a typical answer. It's usually 18 months from, you know, controlled, and then the variable testing is a certain amount of time. In your estimate, what's the shortest period of time that the government regulators will allow for there to be a trial and then deployment, if it works?
So in general, what you outlined is correct. So the regular process would be to test it on rodent, on an animal model, and then a larger animal model, usually some sort of apes. And only after that you go into human, first in human clinical trials. In most diseases, you have a structured way to do this, a structured path to follow. I think that in this case, since we are facing a new challenge and a new, basically, disease, a new virus, there will be some sort of effort to try and speed up the entire process. And I believe that even if I regard our vaccine, our solution specifically, it's an orally based vaccine, so you take it by drinking or by mouth, and therefore it is supposed to be less toxic or less.
It's less severe. Invasive. There's less side effects, right?
Yeah, less. Right, and less. I think a burden on the health. On the medical teams in order to administrate it, and we really hope that it will be less than 18 months for the actual approval and to begin treating people.
So how do I sign up for the trials? Put me number one in the line.
Yes. Now, we will shortly be probably in that phase. I don't know.
Exactly. Ani gam ezrach Israeli. So we won't speak in that language right now. But for all of our listeners, I said I'm also an Israeli citizen. So if you need somebody to try, sign me up. Mm-hmm. But in all seriousness, you guys are really doing yeoman's work out there. I want to go to another point for a second, because you're right in the thick of it. I mean, you are doing the research in ground zero of where we're having the effort to fight back on the long-term solution to fighting back against COVID-19. But now, I'm not assuming you're a public health expert. You're dealing with solutions to viruses and chemical informatics. But as an individual whose country is now in a state of effective lockdown, I mean, no flights are coming in, barely any flights are leaving.
Right.
What's it like to be in a country that is essentially cut off from the rest of the world physically? I'm sure you're talking to your colleagues on the internet over the phone. I mean, you're talking to me on the radio right now.
Yeah.
But what is it like to be hunkered down in a bunker mentality?
Yeah, so luckily we are in an era that we can communicate via internet and other media. But I think that it has an effect. You can see it already, and things are a bit hectic. Or, you know, a lot of flights and conferences I should attend, and I will not get there. It is difficult to plan ahead in this situation, but I hope it will be, first of all, the panic will pass. We will see the exact numbers, and we will learn what is the actual risk in this virus. At the moment, despite a relatively large numbers, I don't think we really can say what will and how the situation will evolve, and we still don't know how fast this virus can mutate and change into perhaps even more dangerous or more infectious form. That's the concern, I guess.
How big of a threat is the virus in its current form?
Sorry, how bad is it?
How bad is the threat of the virus in its current form, pre-mutation, if that takes place?
Yeah, so I think that at the moment, and I'm just, I get the same publications from all around the world. We are speaking about approximately 2-point-something percent mortality. It's obviously more focused on a certain population, certain age group, and people with a lower immune system. If you compare it to the seasonal flu, it is much more severe. And the other problem with this virus is it is very it is infecting in a very high rate.
It's very contagious.
Relative.
Very contagious.
Yeah, very contagious. Yeah. So again, everything is relative to what we are familiar with at the moment. We really hope it will stay that way, but this is the situation. And still, the numbers are keep summing up, and you know we get more and more accurate statistics, but. At the moment, these are the numbers I'm familiar with.
When viruses mutate, do they mutate usually to a more serious strain or a less serious strain, or is there no set rule on that?
So there's no rule for that. Basically, the process itself of mutation is a random process. So it can mutate to a virus which is basically inactive, which cannot do anything as well. But these forms, we will not see them because they will not continue to proliferate or to thrive in humans. So we will most likely see the ones that are mutating to either a mild sort of a version of the virus or a severe one, which is the main concern, obviously. It is difficult to say, but as long as you give the virus to spread and there is a larger part of population that is infected, there is a higher chance to meet even those severe or more severe versions of the virus.
And in terms of the reactions that governments have been taking in terms of demanding a nationwide quarantine, I mean, we see Italy, we see China, now we see Israel. Is that the right approach, or are they exaggerating?
Well, I guess it is. Being cautious in this situation is not something that you can. I think it's a good thing, after all. There is a balance. There is a fine balance between the burden on the economic, which obviously all the countries shut down. It has also risks from other sorts, but at least until we will understand exactly what is the situation we are facing and what is exactly the number of people got infected and how much of them get this the medical condition, the severe medical condition, until that state, I think being cautious is a good way to go about it.
So what we've talked about the vaccine and the potential for then to proliferate, to make people not just build up the antibodies to us, but to help stem contagion. What's the worst case scenario that can happen if COVID-19 goes unchecked? And let's say your vaccine doesn't work. I don't want to, you know, give you a nux. I don't want to give you a jinx. But so we have to realize what's the worst case scenario here.
Okay, so it's again. I'm a scientist, and it's difficult for me to make speculations like that. But what we can see is that we can learn from the past. For example, the introduction of the MERS virus, which was also a member of the corona family. In this case, it was a much more violent version of coronavirus, and it got. It disappeared basically through isolation and through the treatment or the measures that the government took. It is difficult to say with this case specifically because of the high rate of infection. And yeah, I think it's not a question I'm qualified to answer.
No, I understood. You guys are focusing on solutions, not on what happens with disaster. I like that. Yeah. I like that approach. Now, what kind of cooperation is your institute doing with other institutes who are working on a vaccine across the world? Do you have international collaboration? Are you sharing data? What are you doing to help others who are involved in trying to find a vaccine, and how does that work?
So, obviously, from the moment we got out and with this publication, we got a lot of people contacting us, research institutes, and also governments. So we are in contact with several different governments and health authorities around the world, with companies who are willing to help. Some of them are offering their services and knowledge in order to assist us. And obviously, we will need at some time, at some point, the proper funding and facility in order to test our vaccines. In clinical trials and in humans. So I think we have a lot of people coming, or a lot of contacts coming in, and we are trying to answer everyone and to see how and which one of them can really be of the greatest help in order to advance this program as soon as possible.
Is there a way that...
Yes.
I was going to say, is there a way that our listeners can support your effort financially? Can they donate money to your institute?
So, again, as a researcher, I would like to not to comment on that. You can definitely.
Here's what I'm going to say. Here's what I'm going to say. Here's what I'm going to say. Anyone who is listening right now or listens to the podcast later on, go to Migal Institute on Google, look for their donate page, and support their work. The only way that we're going to have a faster response time is if this institute has the resources to be able to develop a vaccine. You just heard Itai speak about this a few minutes ago. He's going to need the facility. He's going to need the funds to be able to rapidly advance this if it meets government approval. And Itai, let's be clear. You're not working on this on a for-profit capacity at Migal. Migal is a nonprofit entity, correct?
Right.
So you're doing this for the betterment of humankind. It's not for a dollar.
Migal is a non-profit research institute. It is basically here to advance and to, you know, to help the region, the Galilee region, the area we are placing in. Obviously, we are in the periphery of Israel, and so we have lower resources than more established institutes, but we are doing really nice research here.
Now there's someone that I would also encourage. Deborah Birx is the White House coordinator for responding to the coronavirus, the COVID-19. And if she's listening to this, she better get in touch with Itai Block and his team over at the Migal Institute in the Galilee. So let's zoom out for a second away from the coronavirus. Let's look at something a little bit more hopeful and a little bit more uplifting. How is it that every time there's some sort of global epidemic, some kind of global pandemic, we hear Israel has the solution? What makes your country and those who are living there, especially a lot of the brain power that's coming out of your institutes, like where you graduated from, the Weizmann Institute, so capable and so talented in being able to contribute to global benefit for health situations and for other technological solutions that many others are basically not developing?
So first of all, thank you for the compliments for Israel. We are trying to
Habibi,
at least here. I think that one important strength we have here is really we are really good communicators between us. So we share knowledge, we share ideas all around. And I think this process of like national brainstorming might be of assistance, because anyone you speak with can contact you with the person you are looking for with the information you are missing. And that's really, you know, a fast way to get to either information or to knowledge that you are missing. Maybe that's an advantage I think we have in Israel, both because of the size and the mentality.
And also, what do you find from your process of working with your colleagues on developing this vaccine? I mean, so you start hearing the news out of Wuhan, China. They're saying, we have this coronavirus global pandemic. Are you waking up at 3 a.m. and saying, Eureka, I've got it. I'm going to replace one genome with another. I mean, how did you guys actually, you know, you say in Hebrew, siman nafal, the exclamation point came up. How did you realize this?
So the credit for that idea belongs to the head of this research group. We are several people, researchers coming from different disciplines. The leader of this group is Professor Jacob Pitkovsky. He is really world-renowned for his effort and contribution for avian vaccines. But he was the one who said, okay, we have good results on the avian vaccine, and there is a current human coronavirus spreading around. Let's do our part. Let's try and adjust and find a solution for the humankind. And from that moment on, obviously, all of us were waiting for the sequencing, for the publication of the genome of the human coronavirus, in order to see that we can really take the same segment that we are using from the avian one, but we can find it also on the human version. And this is basically the adjustment we had to do in order to adopt it to human.
And that's been done?
It evolved, and this is the part we are doing here, and we are now producing the vaccine in order to test it in animal model here at Miguel. Yeah.
So how far away are we from an animal test?
I assume it is a matter of weeks. And again, the first timeline that we laid out was about 3 months. And I think that in about 2.5 months, we can be already after the animal test and getting into the clinical trials.
Yeah, well, let's remind our listeners, science is not this methodology is not a perfect science. So it might be 2 months, might be 4 months. But the bottom line here is that you guys are on the forefront of trying to find the first attempt at getting a vaccination for this horrific disease.
We are trying. Right. We are really doing our best to go there. Yeah.
We're cheering you on. And again, anyone who's listening, support the Miguel Institute. Go on to Google. Look up their website. Itai, why don't you give us the URL, the website address for Miguel?
I think you can just look for Miguel.co.il, so that would be enough.
Okay, Miguel.co.il. Itai Block, researcher of the coronavirus vaccine, part of Jacob Potofsky's team at the Miguel. I probably just messed up his last name, but that's okay. Yep. Part of Professor Potofsky's team at the Miguel Institute in Kiryat Shmoni in the Galil. Thank you for all you're doing for us and for humanity, Dr. Block.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
And that ends our show this week. We have to make sure that we're all taking precautions to prevent the spread of this disease. We must wash our hands, use sanitizer, don't sneeze on anybody else, and make sure you stay 3 feet away from somebody in the deli line when you're getting your knishes on Friday afternoon. That's me, at least. Marilyn's here cracking up. Anyway, everybody have a good week. This is Greg Roman on Middle East Forum Radio, WWDB 860 AM, signing off.